This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Here are some of the headlines we're working on here at NPR News today. Former NATO commander Wesley Clark threw his name into the crowded yet wide-open race for the Democratic presidential nomination today. Former General Clark ended months of speculation with his announcement. He's now the 10th person to throw his hat into the Democratic presidential sweepstakes. You can hear more about that later today on All Things Considered. Tomorrow on Talk of the Nation, comic book author Neil Gaiman, who draws on everything from ancient mythology to the great books for his stories, will talk to him about comics, gods, and monsters on tomorrow's Talk of the Nation. Hurricane Isabel is bearing down on the southeast and the mid-Atlantic states. Isabel is now a Category 2 hurricane with sustained winds near 110 miles an hour. States of emergency have been declared from North Carolina to Delaware. Thousands of residents are moving inland, leaving their homes and property to the whims of the storm. If you've ever evacuated your home ahead of an approaching storm, or if you've ever tried to build a storm-proof house, give us a phone call, 800-989-8255, or you can send us email, TOTN at NPR.org. Joining us now is David May. He's an architect at the TAF Group in Virginia Beach, Virginia, and an expert on hurricane-resistant architecture. He joins us from his office there, and good of you to be with us today.
Hello, Neil.
What would an ideal hurricane-resistant house look like?
Well, it wouldn't look a whole lot different than what most homes look like today. As they say, the devil is in the details, and it's the details of how the house is put together that makes the big difference regarding the survivability of that home in a hurricane.
So is it structure or is it building materials?
It's both. It's the structure, by and large, in this country, we pretty much solved the structure. In fact, if you think back at the videos of any hurricane, most of the homes that you see that are destroyed in the hurricane tend to be right on the ocean front where the winds are strongest. And a lot of those, of course, are undermined by the wave action, which causes them to collapse into the surf.
Mm-hmm.
But the materials and the way that those materials are attached to the outside of the buildings still needs to be worked on, because until recently, and recently I'm talking post-Hurricane Andrew in 1992, the codes really didn't address the cladding on the outside of buildings for residential structures.
So when we do see a roof blowing off in the television footage, what went wrong? What forces are at play?
Well, it's interesting. Most people think that roofs blow down. In reality, actually, a roof blows up. And it's caused by a combination of two things. If you look at a roof in section, the roof looks loosely like, and I'm talking about an asphalt shingle roof that has a pitch to it, it looks roughly like an airplane wing. As a result, you've got wind uplift forces that are lifting on the roof. That by itself is usually not enough to cause the roof to come off, but that in combination with air pressure inside the home, usually caused by a window or a sliding glass door breaking out on the windward side of the home, that added pressure inside literally causes the roof to blow up and off the top of the home.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, of course, you see people nailing up plywood over the outside of the building. That is in an effort to protect the windows, not so much to keep the window from blowing out, but to protect the window from flying debris that could break the glass and allow that air pressure to get inside the home.
I don't mean to sound too skeptical, but you know, before every earthquake, we always hear from architects that, you know, we really got a lot of earthquake proofing, and this problem has really been solved. And then after the earthquake, we find out that no, it hasn't. Are you pretty confident that you've whipped this problem?
Well, it whipped it from the standpoint that we pretty much know how to design a wind-resistive home. What we still have to work on, and the construction industry has to work on, is actually applying what we know out there in the field so that the person that's actually nailing on the shingles or nailing down the roof rafters to the top of the wall is actually doing the things that we know that are necessary to be done to keep the homes from falling apart. We find in a lot of our investigations of buildings that have been allegedly designed to resist hurricane force winds, we find a lot of cases where it is lapses in workmanship that has prevented these homes from surviving. And I'll give you just a real quick example. We're talking about roofs. A lot of times we see sheets of plywood flying off the top of the roof. And what we find is that a lot of builders use nail guns to attach those sheets of plywood. And a nail gun doesn't give the worker any feedback. In other words, they don't know whether the nail actually went into the top of the roof trusses. And oftentimes when we look at these pieces of missing plywood, we find that only a third of the nails actually went into the roof truss and the rest of them missed. And a slight change to, for example, using screws to put screw down the plywood and using a screw gun, and when the screw gun drives the screw in, you know whether that screw went into anything or not. And that plus a screw being much more resistant to pull out than a nail can make a big difference in the survivability of the home.
Well, let's bring Susan Byram Rowntree into the conversation now. She's the author of Nags Headers. It's a history of North Carolina's first beach vacation community. She's with us on the line from her home in Raleigh, North Carolina, and it's good of you to be with us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Your book deals in part with a Nags Head builder named Stephen J. Twine, whose beach cottages were renowned for their ability to withstand the high winds that are no strangers to that area. What made Twine's houses so strong?
Well, Twine built the cottages to fit the slope of the landscape. He built the roof line so that the wind would blow down on the roof and raise up off it, as opposed to up under and lift it off. He also was known to build these houses as sort of a puzzle, so that not one piece moved if the whole house unless the whole house moved. He built about a dozen structures from start to finish in the historic district of Nags Head, the first one in 1910 and the last one in 1936, and by all accounts, they're all standing.
And how do they're all standing? They hold up pretty well?
Yes, they hold up pretty well. That's not to say that he didn't have to go in and repair them after storms. There was a large, strong hurricane that hit the coast in 1933, and he did a lot of repair after that, but he remodeled many of the structures that he didn't build and lifted the roofs off and added full-width dormers to the roof line so that to accommodate growing families.
I also understand that he designed the houses to accommodate beach erosion. They could be moved.
Yes, they could be moved. When they were first built, most of them were built very low to the ground, and they used giant black gum rollers to put under the houses to move them. I mean, he built them designed that way because he knew that there was constant erosion, and so most of the cottages now have been moved back, certainly not that way anymore, but the original cottages were moved that way. He also built St. Andrew's by the Sea Episcopal Church, and he built that on the sound side, but then moved it over closer to the ocean using the same method.
And black gum is a tree common to the shore over in your neck of the woods. David May, what have we learned about oceanfront construction since the first half of the 20th century when Stephen Twine was building those houses?
Well, it's almost like what did we have to relearn? Really, in this country, starting in the mid-1970s, started cutting out a lot of what we already knew about home construction in response to the energy crisis back then. And we went with thinner materials. We were using plywood, and then we've used what's called oriented strand board. And the products we use got thinner. With the 2x4 no longer, for example, is 2 inches by 4 inches. And so as a consequence of an effort to make home construction more affordable, we also lowered the standards and lowered a lot of the safety factors in the construction of those homes. And so we've had to relearn a lot of this as the storms in the last 10 or 15 years has taught us that a lot of times the older ways of building were better.
Susan Byram Rowntree, we're getting ready for another one. I'm pretty sure you're confident about Mr. Twine's houses. What about where you are?
Well, we lived through Hurricane Fran in 1996, and it was troubling. So now I am ready, I think, as ready as I can be. It's not a thing you want to live through a second time, I'll tell you that right now.
No, nobody wants to go through it again. Good luck to you. We'll all bear down together, I guess.
Thank you so much.
Susan Byram Rowntree is the author of Nags Headers. She was with us from her home in Raleigh, North Carolina. David May, we appreciate your time today as well.
You're welcome.
David May is an architect with the Taft Group in Virginia Beach, Virginia. I guess he's going to get some weather, too. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.